Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Pope Runyon, and tonight we present an interview with author, editor, and publisher Darcy Kuntz, who is certainly the foremost authority and resource on the history of the Golden Dawn and its offshoots on this side of the pond. Darcy has worked closely with Robert A. Gilbert, the leading British Golden Dawn scholar, in tracking down, authenticating, editing, and publishing the extensive writings of Golden Dawn Adepti. Darcy is the founding director of the Golden Dawn Research Trust in Austin, Texas, and his current offering is The Magical Writings of Florence Farr, who was a Golden Dawn adept and temple chief and the originator of the magical astral path workings in Western magic. Darcy is also bringing out an edited and annotated version of the Collectanea Hermetica. And that was the recommended readings for the Golden Dawn students' classical readings. So, tune in and learn how to uncover and discover all the secrets of the Golden Dawn. And Darcy will be calling in a few minutes, but let me say a few things about the Golden Dawn and Darcy before he calls in to us. As almost all of you listening are aware, the Golden Dawn was a British ceremonial magic group, a hermetic lodge, a Rosicrucian hermetic, that was founded in 1887. And it was very a serious piece of work, and they had as members some rather prominent intellectuals and very prominent figures at the time. In fact, Florence Farr was a leading actress, stage actress at the time, and she was also the significant other Shaw, George Bernard Shaw. And so she was quite a personality in her own right. As you're also familiar with Wynn Westcott and McGregor Mathers, and Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula, he was a member of the Golden Dawn, and of course, our friend Aleister Crowley, he was a member of the Golden Dawn. The Golden Dawn was the greatest living poet. And he didn't care who knew that, was William Butler Yeats, and he was for several years. He was the imperator and the premonstrator of the Golden Dawn, and this was the quintessential Western hermetic initiatory lodge during that Victorian era, and the Golden Dawn produced a number of, well, they produced a number of beautiful rituals, and they also produced quite a significant corpus of magical writings, which are still being used, are still valid today. Now, by the way, it's probably safe to say that there are more people seriously practicing the Golden Dawn and in Golden Dawn lodges today than there ever were back in the 19th century and the early 20th century. We've had a Golden Dawn revival, and there are Golden Dawn. I think you'll probably find Golden Dawn temples in almost all the major cities in the English-speaking world. So this is a very strong tradition. And Darcy Kunz is he's Canadian originally, and he is on this side, at least here in American Canada, he is the leading Golden Dawn scholar and the editor and publisher of Golden Dawn material. He got his book on the Golden Dawn Cipher manuscript came out before mine did. He thought mine was going to come out before his, but both of us. I think, in fact, as I recall, Darcy was the fellow that introduced me to Bob Gilbert, and so there's a lot of inner cooperation going on here. Bob Gilbert, by the way, and who is one of Darcy's major resources, and certainly one of mine for the cipher book, is the leading Golden Dawn authority and archivist in the United Kingdom and Britain. And Bob Gilbert is also very prominent in Masonry and in the... I think we got... Darcy, are you there? Darcy, are you there? Hello? Hello? Well, you see, isn't quite there yet, but I'll finish talking about Bob Gilbert here. Robert A. Gilbert is very, very prominent in British Masonry. And in fact, he, for years and years and years, he's been the secretary of Crater Coronati Research Lodge over in England, and that's the premier Masonic research lodge in the Western world. And Robert Gilbert is also active in the Society of Rosicrucia in Anglia. Now, that is a Masonic group that the Golden Dawn actually sprang from. And the Society of Rosicrucia in Anglia was a side group made up of very prominent Masons who were interested in Hermetic and Rosicrucian studies. And, Darcy, are you there?
Hey, yes, I am. How's it going, folks?
Oh, good. It's going great. And you came in just about the right time because I was about to run down here and let you take over, and it's perfect. Now, we're talking about Bob Gilbert. I was talking about Bob Gilbert and saying that I recall that you actually got me on to Bob. I think that as I recall that, and it. So,
yeah, but you
first,
contact with Gilbert.
Yeah. Tell us how you got started in all of this. Let's go back to the beginning of your career and how you got started and how it developed, because. We're all curious as to how you got started in this. Go ahead.
Well, I got involved in the occult back in the 1980-81. I was going to studying art, fine art painting, and just down from there was an occult bookshop that I discovered, and I went in there, and the owner took me under his wing, and me and a few other people began studying the occult in his back room on weekends. you know, studying the Kabbalah, the Tarot. And then from there, I hooked up to the Philosophical Society in Calgary. And Ted Davies, he knew a lot about the esoteric traditions, you know, the Golden Dawn and the different groups that are involved. And he really started pushing me to write about the occult. But at the time, I just kind of laughed it off. And then in 1986, I was in a bad car accident, and I broke my neck and nose, and nobody else was involved in the accident, just myself. And I got a settlement from the insurance company. And just about a month after that, I found out about the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Golden Dawn Conference in London, England in 1987. And I flew over there, and I got to meet some pretty interesting people, R.A. Gilbert, Adam McLean, Stephen Skinner, Timothy D. Arch Smith. And that was also where Gerald Suster busted on the stage and said that it was an illegal meeting of the conference because he wasn't informed of it and he didn't give a sanction of it. That was pretty crazy that day. And then after I got back from England, I set up a called Bookshop, where I sold new and used books. And I got in contact with some of the people that I met in the conference, and they were helping with some original material because I was setting up a Golden Dawn group in Canada. And one of the guys that I met in the late 80s was Anthony Fleming, which is non de plume, but his real name was Anthony Fuller. And he started helping me with a lot of material. And I tracked out some of the original material, like the original Cypher manuscript via Anthony, and a bunch of other material. And so then I decided that instead of sitting on this material, I wanted to begin publishing it and putting it into books. So I contacted a number of publishing groups, and I promoted this idea that I was going to write a book on the second manuscript. And as I began writing it in 94, 95, the book really began to grow so large that I split it into a series. And then that's when the Golden Dawn Study series was founded. And in that series, there's 25 books. And, you know, between 1990 and 2000, I was getting involved in a lot of, you know, esoteric groups of, you know, Freemasonry, OTO, Philosophical Society. And I also set up my Golden Dawn Temple in Calgary, Canada, where I, you know, built the furniture and began doing rituals and working with a number of small people, or a group of small people there. And that's when I was 95 when I came in contact with you, Pope. And we were both working on the second manuscript. And then as I kind of found out, there's a number of people that were working on the second manuscript. And so it was kind of the race to get the second manuscript published.
Yeah, perfect. There was a race, all right. You're right.
Yeah. And that was pretty crazy back then. But I never think that, I'd end up, writing a number of books. And then I set up my own publishing group called the Golden Dawn Research Trust.
Yeah.
And what that is a group of individuals that wanted to preserve the, the history, practices, the documents, letters, and books of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn as it existed between 1887 and 1930. I amassed quite a bit of material. I also went back to England in 1998, where I got quite a bit of material that I brought back, and I've been just compiling in the books. But when I first got in the occult, also I found the works of Crowley that were pretty in depth. And as you know, he put a few blinds in his writings. And so, what I wanted to do was I wanted to make sure that this material would be clean and clear and written from an understandable point of view. And that's why when my first book came out, the covers were white, because at the time all the occult books were coming out were black, with blood lettering, to scare people, I guess. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to, you know, really amp up the historical aspect and the respectability of the occult by publishing these clean books, you know, that came from the heart. And I really wanted to be impartial about the occult. Because, you know, Ella Kyle, when he wrote his book, The Magicians of the Golden Dawn, he was a little negative in his responses. But he didn't really see it that way.
Well, you know, I thoroughly agree with you on Ella Kyle. One of the things that I was concerned about was his trying to make out that Wynne Westcott had some sort of multiple personality disorder. And that's just absolutely not true at all. I thought Ella Kyle, and I remember Bob Gilbert said, he said, "Oh, Polk, you would have liked Alec. You would have liked Alec." And I said, "Well, I probably would have, but still, that doesn't change the fact that he really kind of slandered Westcott." And you and I both know that Westcott, that whole Fraulein Sprengel thing was really a completely innocent thing. I mean, that wasn't any attempt to hoodwink anybody. It was a convenience that they had to do. By the way, something I would like to ask you about. You may know more than I do about the latest discovery of Bob Gilbert's that Anna Kingsford was probably the inspiration for behind Fraulein Sprengel. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Anna Kingsford definitely was the inspiration. You know, the book of Astrology Theologized, on the title page you have the motto of Fraulein Sprengel. The original title page, but if you look at the original Schlesinger manuscript, the translations that Westcott did, he did them on the back of the Swedenborgian Rite handout, and also the translations of the letters from Fraulein Sprengel. There's one in there where it says. That you may contact her, Fraulein SBA. Her real name was Sprengel, Fraulein Sprengel. But what in the English translation by Westcott, there's a handwritten note. It says Fraulein A. Sprengel, and it but in the cipher it doesn't say Fraulein A. Sprengel. It says Fraulein Sprengel. So you could tell that Westcott probably traded that particular cipher.
Yeah. Now I was told, and I went ahead and published it, but I wanted to ask you whether you ever heard about this, that Sprengel has a double meaning to German Masons. This fellow told me that if something is a Sprengel to a German, if you're discussing things with a German Mason and he refers to something as a Sprengel, he means that it's bogus. Have you ever heard that?
I've heard something about that, but that's something I haven't really looked into great detail.
If we can confirm that means that Westcott, by calling her Fraulein Sprengel, he was actually, he was giving away his own ruse there. I mean, it really kind of completely exonerates him because we know that they were forced by various factors, which we've both written about, they just had to create something like that in order to get going. But to get back to your material here, you've just recently come out with this beautiful copy here that we got for Soror's Andrea, The Golden Dawn Legacy, The Magical Writings of Florence Farr, edited forward by Darcy Kuntz. And would you tell us a little bit about that book and about Florence Farr?
Yes, Florence Farr was, I think, a very significant figure in the Golden Dawn and also in London at the time, because back then women weren't that strong. But Florence Farr and a number of the women that were involved in the Golden Dawn were very strong. She and Annie Horniman set up the Abbey Theater, and they were the first ones to do the plays of George Bernard Shaw and Yeats. And the Carolyn Wise wrote the introduction to the book. She was the one that had the dream of putting on the plays, and she did. And Florence Farr was the chief adept in the Golden Dawn. She wrote a number of the original cut of the teaching of the Second Order. She also received the color scales from Melina Mathers, but she sat on that for a while. I've got a letter where she finally gives it up. In this letter, she also refers to Crowley and Bennett as senior adepts, as in, but some people don't believe that Crowley reached 5'6", but I definitely believe he did.
Mathers gave it to him, didn't he? Didn't Mathers give him a 5'6" over in Paris?
Yeah, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of record about that, but, you know. But yeah, I definitely believe he did that. It was probably something that he did on his own at his house. But the Florence Farr book contains a lot of all her magical writings that I can dig up, except for the sphere group material. So I've got another book coming out with that and the magical evocation of the spirit of Mercury. John Crow, who wrote a dissertation on Alan Bennett, him and I worked together on gathering the original material, and he, in the back of his book, he's done quite of an in-depth study of the magical ritual of Mercury, and I've got permission to reprint that from him. So that's going to go into another book with Florence Farr. But the magical writings really put, I think, an idea of the magic that Florence Farr had worked, which is kind of clear and nice the way it's put together.
Yeah. Let me ask you something that I think we've all kind of wondered about. You're probably the best person to ask about this. The Golden Dawn, the original Golden Dawn, 1887, went through a cataclysm. I won't say it disappeared, but let's say that it went through a cataclysm from 1900 to 1904, that as a result of that Horos scandal, which I don't think we need to get into too much tonight. Gilbert's written about that. You've probably written some material. You've published some material on the Horos affair. And I know I have, but that original Golden Dawn kind of went into eclipse, and then it got reformed. Sometime before World War I, and then flourished after World War I over in New Zealand and Australia and where else? And in the United States also, under Falcon, Dr. Falcon's administration, then it was called the Stella Matutina. Now, Regardi's 1938 Golden Dawn book is primarily Stella Matutina material, and so the question I have to ask you is, what are the new the newly formed material that Stella Matutina that wasn't in the original Golden Dawn, and specifically the tarot cards. I think there's a Stella Matutina. Weren't they the ones that came up with all this Greek mythology symbolism in the tarot, or was that earlier?
No, yeah, it definitely came from Falcon and I think his wife. But, they produced the 22 major arcana. But Westcott also had a project that he had created, but it's more based on the works of Eliphas Levay, as opposed to kind of the later symbols that they used.
Right. Now, next, the Tatwa, now, but the Tatwa symbols were early. I mean, the use of the Tatwa symbols for scrying, was that original Golden Dawn, or was that still in Matutina?
Well, that was Golden Dawn. That came in the grade of 3 equals 8. And that was actually based on the writings of philosophical writer, a book titled Nature's Finer Forces.
I know, I got the book, and I sure can't, and I can't figure out where the Tatwas are in that book, but it must be in there somewhere. But that system was original Golden Dawn, not Settlement. But the middle pillar, now the middle pillar is still a Matutina, right?
Well, that came from Rigardi. That's kind of, I think, he created that. But yeah, that definitely would come, kind of Stella Matutina.
Yeah, well, he Rigardi kind of hinted, you know, I knew Rigardi, and he kind of indicated that Tolkien had originated it, and it's just a couple of sentences in the Stella Matutina ritual, and Rigardi went and developed it from that. Isn't that the story on that one?
Yeah,
yeah.
Rigardi and Paul Fautakais had a lot of correspondence because. But I believe that Rigardi had planned to join or to publish the Golden Dawn Secrets, because if you look at his book, the My Rosicrucian Adventure, in there he talks about wanting to publish that material. And then when he went through the grades and got the 5-6 material, he chopped his book around. Four volumes set, as you know, 1936 to 1940.
Well, our friend Paul Clark, who's the steward of Attorney of Hidden Light, which is the magical outgrowth of BOTA. He is in the process of publishing all that old case material now, so we're getting that. But one thing though, I know you probably know this better than I do. Case made some major changes in the Golden Dawn program. One of which was the elimination of the Enochian. He didn't like Enochian at all, and so he created his own set of tablets in Hebrew, and that's one change. And then also too, Case didn't like the middle pillar. He started developing a psychic center or a chakra system that was pretty close to the Hindu. Can you tell us about that?
I'm not familiar with Case's chakra system, but I do know that the ritual of the material from BOTA is actually the material of Alpha and Omega. Because a lot of times, I mean, people that went through Bodha thought that Case had originated some original material, but in actuality, it came from the rituals of the AO. So basically, everything is the same to Mather's AO, except for the Bellator's changed, and the Neophyte has also been changed where it's more Masonic, and you get a Masonic apron in there.
Yeah.
And then the tablets, what Case did with the tablets, he actually used the four different alphabets from Agrippa. He used those, and the tablets are basically... references from Crowley 777 that spiral out from the middle, but they're basically all Hebrew letters, but he just interchanged them with that the alphabet from the Agrippa material.
So the structure, it was restructured from the Enochian, though. I mean, it wasn't. He didn't use the same grid. I've never seen those Case tablets, so I don't know.
Yeah, there is no connection to Enochian and BOTA or Case, because he believed that if these were divine, sources or forces, they wouldn't suggest swapping wives with Kelly.
Now, let me ask you another question that we've all wondered about. On the cover of your Cypher manuscript book, you have the 11 spear tree, which of course comes from Isaac Luria, one of Isaac Luria's many trees, and this appears twice in the Cypher manuscript. and as presented as the tree before the fall. And then, of course, the Kircher tree design is the tree after the fall. Now, is there any, have you ever heard of any writings, like a flying roll on this, or any writings about this that were ever developed? Are they, do you think they exist anywhere?
No, there's the flying rolls. I've looked at all the original flying rolls, and, yeah, there's no material on that 11-sphere tree of life that's on the cover of the book. That actually, yeah, that came from the cipher. And I always thought that maybe there was one of the ciphers may have belonged to a different grade, and the other one was more newly created by someone in the Golden Dawn. Because, you know, some of the ciphers that are there were created by a member of the Golden Dawn.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. We both know that. But
yeah, but they weren't all original.
They weren't something that Mackenzie came up with. I think we were pretty sure on that. But and speaking of that, do you think Mackenzie was the actual author of the original cipher manuscript?
I don't know. There could be a connection there, but I've kind of thought about that, and this is my theory on that, is that, see, originally when the SRA was founded, what they did is they went to Scotland to a Rosicrucian group there, and they got the degrees, and then they brought them back to England, and then they set up the SRA. But
yeah.
And then what happened was that SRA in Scotland went into abeyance and disappeared, and nobody knows where it went. And what happened was the only existing temple was the one in London, and they then charted a new SRA in Scotland. But I believe that the cipher manuscripts are from that original Rosicrucian group in Scotland. Because if you look at the notes, could have been notes from the rituals that they were doing. Because the SRA and the Golden Dawn, the mission badges are the same. They do a lot of similar things that the Golden Dawn does. And in fact, Mathers had claimed that the 5-6 had come from Frater L.E.T. But if you go to the SRA, the 5-6 ritual in the SRA is exactly where Mathers got the 5-6 for the Golden Dawn.
Well, that's fascinating. I thought that the SRIA, that they were having this supposedly a squabble about coming up with the rituals, and Mackenzie supposedly kept saying, "Well, I have the original rituals, and the rest of you don't." And then finally, when he died, as Bob Gilbert says, in your book, your cipher manuscript book, you have the original article, reprinted the original article by Bob Gilbert about his theories on how the cipher manuscript was discovered and all of that, the background of it. And then when I came out with my version of the cipher manuscript, I got the second article by Gilbert, where he's talking about the Society of Eight, the little cult. Supposedly, Wentworth Little, who was the magus of the SRIA, he claimed he had something like that, and Mackenzie said he didn't. So you think maybe that Little really did have something very similar to the Golden Dawn?
The myth that kind of came out was that the SRA ceremonies were based upon material that he found in the United Grand Lodge of England, who a little relation had worked there. And what actually turned out, Gilbert had discovered that the so-called ritual was the book of the Rosicrucian Secrets of the 16th and 17th century. It wasn't initiation material. But
well, yeah. That's fascinating because, for one thing, that cipher manuscript, as we both know, was copied down. Whoever copied that down was recopied. It must have been recopied from something by somebody who was in a big hurry because he didn't do a very, you know, it's actually. It's sloppy, and in some places it's just pretty sloppy. And I asked Bob Gilbert about that, and he said, "Oh, McKenzie was ill at that time, and his hand was shaking, and that's what you know." We tried to get a hold of some of his handwriting. Not that that would have done us much good, but I mean, according to Bob, he thought McKenzie did it. Actually, he did the copy I think Bob has it. It's supposed to be in the British Museum, but I think Bob's sitting on it. But you've seen the original. You've seen the original cipher manuscript, right?
Yeah. Well, I spent a week at Gilbert's house when he lived in Bristol, both in 87 when I went there, and then again in 1998 when I went there, where I got the hand copy and check on a lot of materials. It's pretty exciting at the time. Also, the Golden Dawn, when it was founded, Mathers wrote, expanded the rituals from the cipher. And then Westcott, he spent a lot of time developing the system that was based on Freemasonry, kind of the structure of Freemasonry. And I think that anybody that gets involved in the Golden Dawn should also take a look at the Freemasonry, because that's really an idea of the structure and how things were built up. I'm working on a book since 1988. I've been gathering all the original material on how the Golden Dawn was run, how it was founded, all the documents that were used within the Golden Dawn by the Imperator, Premonstrator, and Cancellara. It's about a 400-page book, and I've discovered some other material that I've been waiting for. And I'm just have to purchase copies of it, which will probably be a couple, $300-$400, and finish the book up. Some of the sources of the Golden Dawn, other sources was the scepters. They actually, in England and Canada, the Royal Arch is called the Holy Royal Arch, and in America, the officers they use gavels. But in England and Canada, they use scepter, and they have three scepters. One of the scepter is for the principal officer is a crown-headed scepter, just like the Hierophant uses in the Golden Dawn. The third in command, the Hegemon, they have a crown-headed scepter, just like the Hegemon. Yeah. So now the second in command, the High Roots, the Golden Dawn, they use a sword, but in the Holy Royal Arch, they use a rayed eye scepter. So you have, at the end of the scepter, you have an eye, and then with rays coming out from it. And then
let me interrupt you. That's 28th degree. Now the 28th degree in Scottish Rite, and that's very, very old. It was originally developed by the Illuminati of Avignon, not to be confused with the Bavarian Illuminati, but they have that eye on the top of the scepter, and that's in the so that's where that comes from, I think. Anyway, go ahead.
So, and then the fourth officer in the Royal Arch, that's equivalent to the Carrick, actually carries a lion-mounted scepter. So it's basically a lion on top of a scepter, and it's quite interesting because the Golden Dawn, the Carrick, is the voice of the Hierophant, or the God.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that the Rosicrucian Society originally, it's influenced by the Royal Arch, which came earlier, obviously, and I went through. I remember I went through Royal Arch down here, I can't remember those scepters, but we certainly made them for the Golden Dawn, and the Hierophant wand has the four worlds. It has the four knobs going down. There's a knob on the bottom, and then there's three knobs going up. So it's supposed to represent the middle pillar, as I recall. Does that is that the scepter they have? Does it have those knobs going up like that?
They're a little different. In my book, The Temple Manual, I've got a photograph of the original scepters that were used in the Canadian Royal Arch. They're pretty nice, and but they wouldn't be equivalent to the way the Golden Dawn, you know, put all the knobs on theirs. But they're basically, you know, just a scepter with a handle, and you don't have a whole lot of, you know, knobs. So in America, they don't use those scepters in the Royal Arch. They just use gavels.
That's kind of what I was thinking, because I couldn't recall them when I went through Royal Arch. But that was quite some time ago. I think the eye owes something to the Knight of the Sun and Prince of Death, probably.
Maybe.
But anyway, yeah. Are you have you gotten into Scottish Rite yet?
No, I haven't. Because here in America, they've quite, I guess, dumbed it down. But Rex Hutchin, you know, had neutered a lot of the grades, so that they're under half hour.
Why, we're trying. We are really. In fact, I'm not going to say that. I can't say too much about that because I know Rex Hutchins. But oh my gosh! But at least we're trying to get the 28th degree back. We are.
Yeah.
We are on a campaign to do that. Unfortunately, Rex really did a job on the 28th, and that's our hermetic degree, of course, in Scottish Rite. Glad to hear you realize that you're with me on that.
I wanted to also cover the Carrick's wand, you know, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. Because what happened was that, you know, the Carrick's wand, they don't really go into great detail in the Z documents, you know, Z1 and Z3, about the lesser officers with scepter. And but in the cipher, you've got a lot more detail of the Hierophant, the Hierus, and the Hegemon. But then, but when you get to the sort of the lesser officers, you have the symbols of the, you know, the badge, or the, you know, the two snakes on the central pillar, the caduceus, and then you have, you know, a cup and the Silphot cross. What happened was that Rigardi, when he saw the original Z documents, someone had told him that the original ciphers, they don't have like the Laman drawn out where you have the circles around and then you have the inner circle and then you have the symbol in the middle. All they had was just a symbol. But someone had told Rigardi that was the original Carrick's wand. And so he put that forward, and then he imparted that knowledge onto Chicken Tabitha, who created the that beautiful wand, you know, with the scepters climbing up to the winged scepter. But what happens is the Carrick's wand is actually just a straight shaft, and it's divided in three colors. Now, Pat Zaleski put the idea forward that the three colors were red, black, and yellow. Yellow being air, mediating the two forces of water and fire. In the Golden Dawn, the Outer Order, there was no color. It was kind of like in, you know, Wizard of Oz, where when you hit the Inner Order, you know, the curtains open up, right, and there's this vault, right, and you've got this beautiful color. And the colors in the Golden Dawn, there's three main colors in the Outer Order. It's black, red, and white, which has, you know, alchemical significance. So the wand coloring should be white at the top, black at the bottom, and red in the middle. Now, I had discovered that through reading and, you know, the manuscripts that I have. And then I had found out that BOTA also has the same coloring theme of black, white, and red.
Yeah, well, then they must have bypassed Rigardi on that one. I can understand why Rigardi did why he went for that, because that's the four that gives you your four elemental colors. But while we're on that subject, if you've seen our Rites of Magic, we do a Watchtower opening, and our adept out there doing the opening is using our Chief Adept's wand. And the reason why we did that was because the Chief Adept's wand has the four, you know, it has the four elemental colors. So when you're working a particular Enochian tablet, you can hold the wand in the color, you know, on the shaft, in the color of the tablet, which makes it. But however, the problem with that is that the head of the Chief's Adept's wand is that winged sun disk, which means it really can't trace. It's not very good for tracing complicated Kamea type governor sigils on the tablets. And I started wondering what to do about that. And somebody said, well, wait a minute. Why don't you use a portal wand? Then you got that nice pointed white star, and you have the four elements. And that would work out perfectly for Golden Dawn and Enochian operations, which is what we finally ended up doing. But what do you think about that? I mean, do you think the portal wand would work in that respect?
I think, you'll put energy into it, and definitely you'll get results from it. Because, doing magic like that will definitely, you don't need to have a lot of experience to get results. And I could see that be powerful use. The Lotus Wand would also be, I think, of use, for banishing.
But here again, though, the Lotus Wand has that flower. It's hard to really do those sigils with it when you're pointing a flower at them, you get them precise. And unless you have really, really big tablets, wall-sized tablets. But, on the issue of the vault, there are different color schemes on the inside of the vault. And some color schemes, they don't they're almost identical. The colors on all the sides of the vault seem to be almost identical. But I understand that if it's properly done, they are glazed. They're supposed to be glazed in the color of the elements. Is that correct or?
Well, you have the primary colors on there, and then what they do is they mix them to the planet. That it's connected to. So, like, for Venus, you would add green to it. So, each of the walls should be slightly different, but you may or may not be able to detect it. But it's really, when you get into the vault and it's painted properly, and it's pretty powerful.
Now, let me ask you about this idea. One of our members who has since gone elsewhere came up with the idea of imagining the vault like a Kala Chakra, like as if you were doing your Kala Chakra initiation, and you memorize that. You memorize and visualize and actually create in your own imagination the Kala Chakra Mandala, which is, and the Tonka, both of which are terribly complicated. So his idea was, if we really want to master the vault, let's commit it to memory, in visual memory. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I mean, that's definitely Hermetic tradition, is to complicate it as much as you can. But I think that, working that would definitely help in your magical progress, as well as your ability to initiate. Because not only are you developing yourself, you're also, developing and coming in contact with the energies that move throughout the temple, like with initiation. So that would definitely open you up to the, to the energies in the temple. So that, I think, definitely would be something to do. But it's, I think it's a lot of work and, something very complicated, like as you were saying.
Well, yeah, it's very much of a yoga. It's a yoga-type procedure. And which, of course, brings me to the point of mentioning that a great deal of this work, as we know, involves getting these symbols and these correspondences into yourself. And in other words, internalizing all of this. I remember when I was, my Golden Dawn mentor was Dave Kennedy, who was a very close student of Dr. Gregardi's for years. And Dave said, when you're doing your implements, he said, do them all together. Get your rose cross, your tree of life, and your wands, all ready to paint, all primed and ready to go, and then mix up the colors and make sure that the rose cross and the wands and the tree of life and the crux and sun, all of them, are in exactly the same colors. And then because otherwise, if you do them all separately, they're going to end up in different colors. That's a lot of work, but then it's the right way to do it. Tell us, what do you think of Chick Cicero's Secrets of the Golden Dawn Temple? Would you recommend that?
Secrets of the Golden Dawn Temple is, it's an excellent book. Chick and Tabitha, they've done quite a bit of good work for the Golden Dawn. They really brought forth and broke down blinds. Like the Enochian system in Rigardi's book, I would stay away from with a 50-foot pole. Now, Chick and Tabitha, they went back and they corrected the Enochian tablets that they published in their books, and they've really cleaned up the material to make it accessible. Secrets of the Golden Dawn Temple has a lot of good material in there, how to build the temple furniture and implement for Golden Dawn Hall.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the hour, Darcy. I want you to review. I want you to review right quick what you've got out there, and give us your website, and tell us what you got currently offering in the way of books, and so we can get we can get the word out there. So take it. Go ahead. Tell us how to get in touch with you and where your books are and what's going right now. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I got the Kotani Hermetica Volume 1 and Volume 2 that have expanded quite a bit. And the Volumes 3 and 4 are going to be coming out in the next month or two with a lot of new material with introduction from Olin Rush and William Burkle. And the Florence Farr book, The Golden Dawn Legacy of the Magical Writings of Florence Farr, is my latest book with all Florence Farr's magical writings. That's available on goldendawntrust.com. Also, I write and publish a free magazine where I put in a lot of really good quality material, and it's you can print high copy resolution of these. It's called the Ruby Tablet, and that's available on azia.org, and that's ASIYA.org. And I have another alchemical text that's coming out that John Greer and myself had written, and that's probably about a month away.
Well, that sounds great. Oh, by the way, we didn't mention too much about the Collectanea Hermetica. Right quick, let me make sure everybody understands. This is all of the study material that the original Golden Dawn recommended that their students. It was publicly available, but they published it. It was published for the general public, but it was the material they recommended as background study, and it was classical material, classical Hermetic material. It's really excellent, and it's sort of the the bedrock of the Golden Dawn. And there are been a couple different publications of it available, but you're gonna do the definitive one. You're in the process of doing the definitive one that's annotated and edited and whatever. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And thank you. Yeah, Darcy, thank you so much for being on, and you're a national treasure now. You're a national treasure in Canada. You're a national treasure now, and you're one heck of a terrific resource. And we really, really appreciate all of your contributions, and you're just like I said, you're filling a niche that really, really needed to be filled. And we really appreciate it. And so I'll sign off with you right now because I got a couple of things to announce before the end of the show. So take care, be well, and we'll hopefully see you in Lodge.
All right, take care.
I wanted to make sure before we sign off here that everybody knows about a film that was made in Austin. It was made in Austin, Texas, by a local cast and crew and whatever. And it's called The Happy Poet. And it's The Happy Poet happens to have our Rusty Wizard himself in a recurring bit role as the doorman. And you'll see him smiling there, guarding the door. And he gets the happy poet's runner delivers his organic sandwiches to Rusty Wizard there. And you want to see The Happy Poet. Now, for those of you here in Los Angeles, it's going to be running for another week. It's doing so well at the Lemley Santa Monica Theater. That's called the Monica, and it's Lemley Theater down toward the beach in Santa Monica, called the Monica. And it's got one more week. It runs through April 4th. Now, The Happy Poet, we saw it, and it is just really a great movie. It's about a vegetarian food guy. He loves to make vegetarian sandwiches, and he holds forth out of the park trying to get people to eat to buy his vegetarian sandwiches. And I know that sounds kind of funky, but this is a movie with a real heart, and it's a real deep movie, and you'll enjoy it. So we want to make sure that you know that Rusty Wizard's in it, and it's at the Monica in Santa Monica through April 4th.
Lemley.
Well, it's the Lemley Theater, but it's called the Monica. And, okay, now, next week, right here on the Hermetic Hour, live, we're going to do something we haven't done in all, well, we haven't done it yet. So, next week, the Sufis. We're going to try to get one. But even if we can't get one, they're kind of hard to catch. But we are going to do the Sufis, and you're going to learn about Nur al-Din and all of his adventures, and a little bit of Omar Khayyam, and you'll find out just what the difference between a Sufi and a Sabaean is, and so that whole business, and coming along with a couple of good Sufi books we're going to recommend. So if you want to find out how to Suf with the Sufis, tune in next week, and we'll be on there. And meanwhile, good magic.